Contest of Champions, episode number 27, Vision versus Gambit.
Let's get ready to rumble! Contest of Champions. It's the CLC!
Hello again, comic fans, to the second exciting season of the Contest of Champions Live. Spring is here, although not very springy. It was a little cool today. But we are back with the seventh fight of Season 2 and the 27th episode under our belt since we have gone live. Thank you to both listeners and competitors for helping us make this the premier online comic book game of the century.
Very nice. As always, returning this week as your COC Live hosts with the most are the Clobbery. I know.
Clobbery.
We're going to have to change that to something easier.
Yeah, I know.
The Clobbering Clergyman, Jeff Jackson. Jeff, how's it going?
Good. Things are great.
Good. And, of course, myself, the Canadian Cape Killer. Joining us this week is the wedding planner, Daniel Fabrizio, and Thanos' personal masseuse, Eli Anthony.
Hey, guys.
I like that. I finally got a nickname.
Hey, you're not anybody, or you're nobody until you have a nickname on the COC show, I guess.
That's right. So everybody doing okay tonight?
Oh, yeah.
I finally got some rest, so yeah.
All right. Y'all ready for talk some Vision and Gambit action later?
Definitely.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, what we'd like to start off with is just to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's going on in the world of comic book news. And this one is interesting. DC has announced that Lobo is finally getting a film adaptation. According to some news sources, it was originally attached to Guy Ritchie, who eventually opted out to work on the Sherlock Holmes series. But now it appears that Brad Peyton, who did... he did a movie recently. What was it? Some director.
I had a list of his movies, and I didn't recognize any of them, so I didn't write them down.
There was one recently that had The Rock in it. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, he's going to be rewriting the script and directing DC's most infamous anti-hero on the big screen. But our question is, will the majority non-comic buying public buy into a Lobo movie? What do you guys think? Does anybody care about Lobo anymore?
He's DC's version of Wolverine. I don't know anything about the character.
No, yeah. He's not quite Wolverine. But yeah, I can see some similarities.
I think he was like... I sort of thought he was supposed to be sort of symbolic of the generation that he was created in. Because he was created in the 80s, I think, right, Eli?
Yeah, early 80s.
And he was kind of like this really excessive, big-haired, tattooed, loudmouth, one-liner biker guy. Like he seemed to sort of exemplify everything of the era. Do you know what I mean? Like everything of the 80s. And then I think it seemed to me like they originally brought him out just kind of a joke, and then people instantly took to the character, and then he went from being kind of this villain to one of those, you know, I'm not really sure, is he a good guy or a bad guy? He's, you know, because he does bad things, but oftentimes he'll do it to bad people. So
my only experience with him is recently watching an episode of Justice League, and it was the one where Superman, they think Superman dies, and they have his funeral and all this stuff, and Lobo shows up, and he wants to be the Superman's replacement, and he's just super annoying, and everybody hates him, and He just causes all kinds of havoc and that kind of thing. So he was really more annoying, but in the cartoon, they were kind of poking fun at the character as well. I mean, it was not a serious take on this character at all, but, you know.
He's been written very differently over the years. He's been shown to just toss Superman around like he's a little girl, and then he's also been shown to have more down-to-earth level strength. But he's like a cosmic biker. His bike, you know, he rides across through space. He's a bounty hunter, and he loves women and drinking and saying fraggin'. And I think he killed everyone on his own planet, including his own family. Like one of his things he says, I think, is I'm the last, whatever he is, a Zarthian or something, because I killed them all. And I think the public would take to him if they play up the women and the bad boy aspect of him and make him kind of tough, but not so comic booky, maybe right. More like a regular down to earth guy. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that sells movies anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always going after women, so
you
can throw some of that in there.
DC couldn't capitalize on any of the other heroes that they have. I mean, they have so many that they went with an obscure character. That's like Marvel making their first movie, Howard the Duck.
Which they did. it kind of stinks that, you know, with characters like The Flash, who I really think could carry a good movie, that they're leaning towards. I mean, I think right now Warner Brothers is trying to do anything they can to make a good DC comic book movie, just because they're just getting slammed. So this seems like a
good casting directors. That kind of sucked in Green Lantern.
Oh yeah.
Oh boy.
Agreed.
But you know, I think Lobo could become a serious cult type movie.
Yeah.
I think a lot of non-comic fans, or even comic fans who don't really know much about Lobo, if the movie's done well, I think that it could do that. But, I mean, I don't think it'll be mainstream. I don't think it'll make mainstream money.
The thing I don't like is they're choosing a space anti-hero. Why wouldn't they go with, like, a really cool character that they could use all over the place with, like, Deathstroke?
That's not a bad idea.
Oh, Deathstroke would be nice.
I think with Lobo, though, I think the only way they could make this movie successful is if they really cater to the non-comic book fans, because the problem is that Lobo has a bit of a cult following in the comic world, but outside of that, like, my comparison is the John Carter. It'll be just like John Carter, where, like, if you're not, you really got to sell this to people. Like, you got to get them to buy it, and not as a comic book movie. You got to get them to buy it as, check out this character. He's really interesting, you know, and if they can't do that, then I think they're doomed.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to find out.
He's mostly been used as a joke character, right?
Yeah.
Like, they have Lobo killing Santa Claus, and I remember in the 52 series, not the new relaunch, but the, you know, that 52 and 52 or whatever, they had him, and he was like a priest in it, and he worshipped some kind of flying dolphin or something, and it's hard to take him seriously.
So he's a combination.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Anybody that hurts dolphins, he's going to kill him. He's going to take him out. He loves dolphins. That's right.
Wow. He sounds like he's a combination of Deadpool, Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and throw him into space just for good measure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bit hard to swallow.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
All right. Enough Lobo talk. Previously on COC, last week we were witness to a unique battle between She-Hulk and Mandarin at the mutant concentration camp Neverland, due to being called away to a freestyle rap competition. Gid was unable to record with us. To review all the witty banner that accompanied that fight, check it out on comicattack.former.com. You can find everything under the forums for Contest of Champions. The poll from last week named Oh, sorry, I'm reading that wrong. The poll named Mandarin as the winner. I think that by far the lightest voting week yet, isn't it, Jeff?
I agree. Yeah, it's kind of dismal.
Yeah, it's really sad, actually.
There were fewer votes than people who are actually playing this game.
Yeah,
which is really sad.
So I won't read the total votes. I'll say the percentages, and it makes it sound really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So She-Hulk had 33% of the votes, and Mandarin had 67% of the votes. And so the poll named Mandarin as the winner. Jeff, do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think this is actually a really good matchup. I would love to see this in the comic book. I think that if She-Hulk could get her hands on Mandarin, then he's toast. I just think, you know, if she can run up and start pummeling him or doing that kind of thing, I think she could get him. I could see her easily just grabbing his hands and breaking his hands, and then he can't use his rings. And after that, then he's just, you know, a dude with broken hands. But I don't think that would actually happen in this fight. I think Mandarin's got a slight edge on the speed on She-Hulk. And I think he would use that to his advantage, to confuse Jen. I do only think that the rings that would affect her are the Mento Intensifier, which when I hear Mento Intensifier, I just think of like breath mints that are just really like powerful. I'm not quite sure if her ovoid technique might, if it would counteract that. She doesn't use it that often, so I don't think that would if that would be able to, if she would be able to shrug off the Mento Intensifier. But I also think the white light ring, in terms of levitating She-Hulk, Mandarin could use, and the black light ring encasing her in darkness. And then maybe one shot with the disintegration beam would be enough to subdue her, at least knock her out for a minute. Or the matter rearranger ring, which would maybe surround her head with a pocket of like poisonous gas. And I think that might be able to take her down pretty quickly. So I think he could use those rings. I don't think that the ice or the fire ring or whatever those things are would be able to really take her out. So I could conceive that Mandarin would encase that area in darkness, levitate her with the magnetism of the white light ring, and then get a really good, awesome shot in with the disintegration beam, and that, I think that would subdue her. So I'm gonna go with Mandarin in this one.
Yeah, I'm good. I agree with Jeff that I think it'd be a lot closer than some people might think. I don't think Mandarin walks away with this fight. I do think Mandarin wins the fight in the end, but I think it would be close. And one of the things, if I was Mandarin, that I'd be doing is I'd be trying to stay away from She-Hulk as much as possible. I know Mandarin's an excellent hand-to-hand fighter, but in all honesty, you don't really want to be hand-to-hand fighting with any Hulk, not She-Hulk, not Bruce Banner Hulk, not Red Hulk. You know, you want to keep your distance. You don't want to go toe-to-toe with those guys unless you're some heavyweight like they are. And Mandarin is not a heavyweight like they are. You know, he might have, you know, enhanced strength and, you know, really awesome martial arts skills. But let's be honest, you know, what's he really going to do? You know, like, it's not like he's, and I know Gid showed pictures of him, you know, using his martial arts to beat up Iron Man. But I think that was just for the drama of the writing. I don't believe that, you know, he's going to karate chop She-Hulk in the neck or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think she gets a hold of him and that's it. He's done, like just absolutely done. One backhand and Mandarin's picking his teeth up, you know? So, but with that being said, I do think that he has enough power in his rings that, you know, he can throw a big variety of stuff at her and he's eventually going to knock her down. So the key for him is, you know, rope it open. You stay away from her and, you know, keep blasting at her. I think she really does fight through a lot of his blasting rings. Most of them are energy powered rings that, you know, throw some type of a force like blast at her. I think she fights through much of that. In fact, in my head, I really was looking forward to seeing this fight in comics. Excuse me, because I'd love to see her, see him increase her gravity and watch her drop into the ground a little bit, and then watch her fighting out of the ground at the same time, like almost like an unstoppable force coming forward at him. But I think Mandarin wears her down and he gets the better of her in the end of this fight. So I vote Mandarin too. So that's the sweep for Mandarin.
What do you guys think, Eli, Daniel? What do y'all think?
I didn't vote for a while because I kept waiting for Tom to say something else. And initially I was waiting for Gid, but I went with old Mandy. I think he could do it. I mean, most of his rings I don't think would do much to her. And of course, if she got anywhere near him, it would be over. Because he's bad and all, but Iron Man is not a Hulk. Beating up Iron Man with your bare hands is not anything compared to She-Hulk. She's not, you know, Bruce, but she's still pretty tough. But I still think that Mandy takes it.
Daniel, what do you think?
I'm going with She-Hulk.
Really?
Yeah, I think that Mandarin has the rings and he can use those rings, but he would have to be on the spot because, like you said, this is a Hulk. A Hulk can close distance really quickly if needed. So getting inside, if Mandarin's not on top of it, if She-Hulk gets inside, I think she could easily take him down.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and both Jeff and myself were saying that we would have loved to see Tom on the forums just a little bit because I don't think it would have taken much to convince us that that Hulk could take this, or She-Hulk, pardon me, could take this. So yeah, I don't think Dan's crazy at all. I think he's got something there.
Yeah,
and I agreed. She-Hulk she's not just a brawler. She's a pretty dynamic character. I mean, she's done some pretty interesting things in her life with her abilities that are way beyond just brawling and strength. But it's too bad she went out.
It'd be nice to see her well written again. I don't like her in the Defenders, but again, I don't like Matt Fraction on Teen Books.
Yeah.
Is Green She-Hulk in Defenders or is Red She-Hulk in?
Oh no, that's Red She-Hulk. But yeah. I mean, the power set should be fairly similar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and your point being that, you know, really, I think Dan Slott was the last person to write She-Hulk fairly well. So.
Too bad Dan Brienne's not on the show tonight because I know I'm pretty sure he's a huge She-Hulk supporter. I'm pretty sure he loved her book, that book, when she had her solo title there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's too bad for Tom, but good for Gid because that was his first win of the game. So, both of those guys are at 1 and 2 in the competition.
Tough, eh? Tough. It's hard to believe they're 3 fights in already, eh?
Yeah.
It's going fast.
Yeah.
All right. So to learn more about the COC, go back and listen to the live draft or any of our episodes 1 through 6 by going to comicattack.former.com and look it up on the forum, appropriately titled COC. You'll be able to find all kinds of witty back and forths there. We list our power rankings there. We list everything you need to know about this show and this game you can find there.
All right, now for our question of the week, which is now turning into the new segment on the show where Moses asks us a question. and Moses asks, once again, what comic book character or team has the coolest vehicle? The Blackbird, Batmobile, the Starjammer, Gray Malkin, the Invisible Jet, the Stratojet, Battle Cat, He-Man had a comic book, didn't he? The Fantasticar, the Battle Van, Ghost Rider's motorcycle. That's all I can think of. There are tons more.
Okay.
So I think he's asking the general wide question, but he mentioned a lot of examples there. But
yeah.
Well, Ian, how about you go first, and we'll cycle through.
You know, it's good, though. It's good that Moses asks these questions because his questions are always so good.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty sure if other people ask questions, we'd skip theirs to go to his anyway. So it's not a bad thing.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I love this question. I thought long and hard about this question. There's a lot of really bad vehicles out there, like vehicles that just make me laugh. And then there's some cool ones, too. Mine might fall in between. Some people might hate the vehicle that I'm going to pick, but I don't know, for some reason I love the concept behind it. And for me, the vehicle that I think is the best one is Eva, Phantom X's ship, which also doubles as his nervous system. And, you know, I remember being completely grossed out and fascinated at the exact same time when the first time I saw him like regurgitate his ship and it come, you know, out of his body, and then he gets in it and it flies him away. I thought, you know, you have to be a really disturbed writer to come up with an idea like that. But how fantastic is that? So yeah, for me, Eva, I absolutely love the idea of that ship. And I have to say too, you know, I know, you know, we don't want to go long on the shore or anything, but for me, for sure, the runner up for this, and again, it's a living ship, would have to be those, and Jeff, you might remember the name of them.
Oh yeah.
Those giant whale things in space that the Brood used to fly around in.
They're like
space whales. They're...
Yeah, I can't remember the name of their race, but yeah, I mean, those are really cool.
I thought that was another really awesome idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, but Eva's my vote.
All right. Eli, how about you?
I chose Scuttlebutt, Betty Ray Bill's ship. It's alive and sentient, but it's a separate being. It's its own being. But Bill just talks to it to command it, and it looks cool. It looks like it has a mouth in the front. It's a big spaceship, and it actually helps Bill out. One of my favorite parts of the series where Bill was going after Galactus, and Galactus sends his heralds to slow Bill down, and the Silver Surfer catches up to him. So Bill comes out of the ship, and they've already fought a bit and toss Silver Surfer aside and flown away, and then Silver Surfer catches back up, and they kind of call a little truce just to talk, because the Surfer says, "I just want to talk, old friend." So they're talking, like, you know, they're outside the ship, just hovering there in space, and something's happening at Bill's destination, a couple of light years away or whatever, and the ship Scuttlebutt is monitoring that, and so he decides on his own that Bill needs to get back inside so they can complete their plan. So he just blasts the crap out of Silver Surfer, and Bill says, Bill jumps back in the ship and he says, "You know, old friend, it's probably not so so honorable to hit him like that during parlay." And Scuttlebutt, you know, he says something snarky to him like, yeah, but we got to go. We're on a timetable." And it's just pretty cool. And it's like when you're fighting Beta Ray Bill in space, you're facing him and the ship. Mm. So another sentient ship.
Cool. All right, Daniel?
My choice is actually rather awkward, but I remember the first time I saw it, and I thought it was the coolest thing, and that was the turtle blimp.
Nice!
I remember thinking, these are supposed to be ninjas. How the hell are you not supposed to see a turtle blimp?
Right.
The only thing that I could think of is how they've still mastered the art of the ninja is everybody's confused that there's this giant turtle blimp up there that they just drop down on top of wherever they're going.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, where did they really hide that, and how did they get it back into its hiding spot?
And also, blimps are amazingly slow. So it's like, you know, somebody like in a fighter jet is like, you know, going somewhere, and like they're like in a blimp, you know? How are they going to catch up?
I mean, I guess you just got to catch them whenever they're going for coffee or something.
I guess.
It's New York City. I assume, like, they're used to seeing, like, the Goodyear blimp or something. Maybe they'll just get away with it like that.
Yeah.
And how did you get away with, like, air traffic clearance and everything? I just never understood it. It's not like the X-Jet or Evo where it's easily stealthable.
Yeah.
Whatever. No, this is a blimp.
That's a good one. I hadn't thought of that. That's good. Good. My vehicle is the Runaways Leapfrog, from the Runaway series that Brian K. Vaughan wrote. I don't know if you guys read that, but they basically stumble upon this vehicle that belonged to their evil parents, and it's basically a giant mechanical frog. It doesn't, you can't drive it, you can't fly it, you hop around in it, and it looks like a big frog. But that's how the Runaways get around. They jump around in this mechanical frog, but it's also sentient, and so it always has interesting things to say. But one of the reasons why I liked it is that after one of the members of the Runaways, Gert, dies, Molly, who is the youngest member of the Runaways, is feeling kind of sad. Everybody's bummed out, and she's talking to the Leapfrog about whether or not there's a heaven, and Leapfrog is thinking, well, how do I tell her, how do I tell her that that's a subjective, there's no proof that there's a heaven, but the Leapfrog eventually just decides that it's better just to tell Molly that there is one, that there is a heaven, and that Gert is there, but it was just a really great scene of writing between this little girl who was sad and this inhuman sentient machine who doesn't have any feelings, but it was just fun. So I love the Runaways, and I love the Leapfrog. So I thought it was a pretty original system of travel, hopping. Yeah.
I think Moses is going to be surprised with our picks. I don't think any one of our picks were, there was no Fantastica or Spider Buggy or, any of those.
I did like the Spider Buggy. I mean, just because it could, and I liked the Spider Buggy because of when in Old Man Logan, that run, where Wolverine and Hawkeye are yeah. in it, and they're traveling across the country, and then they run up the side of the wall and do all that cool stuff. I mean, they actually made the Spider Buggy pretty cool. So,
Oh yeah, I have another honorable mention.
Yeah.
The Blue Beetle's Beetle, not the current Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes, but Ted Kord, the Blue Beetle who died a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
He had this. It looked just like the Blue Beetle on his chest. It was a beetle with legs that hovered around, and Ted Kord was this technological scientific genius, and it just had all kind of cool little doodads and things in it, and it was just a great little superhero vehicle to just move around the Earth, and it looked like a beetle. It was pretty cool.
I think the worst one is the Invisible Jet, Wonder Woman's Invisible Jet. I just think that's the stupidest vehicle, mainly because when you see her riding around, she's just, you can't see the jet. You just see somebody sitting in the jet, and they're just, they're just flying around, sitting,
I wonder if that was started by mistake.
You think so?
Yeah, because every time after that, it just became the butt of jokes. Like, the invisible jet's here. It's a dotted line.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm not a huge DC guy, especially when it comes to Wonder Woman. I don't know anything about her. Can't she fly?
She can.
Yeah.
So what does she need a jet for?
I don't know.
Well, but not only that.
It's like Flash having a car.
But not only that, but I mean, she's like an Amazon. Like, why do they have invisible jets?
Yeah, that part I never understood. They're using swords, but they have jets. They have jet technology, but yeah. You're going in here with a long sword. Good luck.
Yeah.
One thing's for sure, though, after I saw the movie The Watchmen, not so much after I read the book, but after I saw the movie, the Owl or Night Owl or whatever his name is, his vehicle that came out from under the water, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, when I saw that, I was like, I would love to own something like that.
And then,
they made it really believable for some reason, like as though, hey, that could exist. I don't know.
And the Night Owl, going back to Blue Beetle, that's what Night Owl was. Wasn't he the Charlton? Blue Beetle was the Charlton character that Night Owl was modeled after.
I think so. Because the Night Owl's little thing you're talking about, Ian, it's just like Blue Beetle's thing.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
The only difference is Blue Beetle's thing actually has little legs that for landing gear, that little beetle legs. But it's like the same shape and everything. And it goes underwater, it can go underground and all that stuff. And it kind of just hovers like
now,
that.
See, See, I totally don't believe that, because that would mean that Alan Moore wasn't original with that idea. And I know he does not take anybody's ideas.
Right. Of course, right? He's all original.
He is. He's, you know.
Yeah. Sure.
You guys better watch out. That guy practices dark magic.
He can hear us right now.
He's got a COC voodoo doll.
Yeah. Hey, I'm telling you, you just can't speak his name. You can't speak.
I'll start
going to express his disappointment with us next.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to start growing this big wacky beard, and I won't be able to keep it in control.
I swear, I was driving around downtown the other day, and I swore it was Alan Moore. Just turned out to be another homeless guy.
Nice. Well, nice.
All right. That's three times you've said his name.
Oh, it's like Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Bad woman.
But before the big fight, it's always tradition here on COC Live for all the participants and Jeff and myself to choose a fight from this week's comics that we consider to be the highlight fight of the week. Jeff, I'm going to have you go last. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think yours would be good last. So I'll go first, and then we'll sandwich Daniel and Eli in between, and we'll go and have you go last.
Okay.
Okay. So for my fight of the week, I took my fight from X-Men number 27, written by Victor Gishler. And the fight itself that I'm taking is Vampire Jubilee, who, you know, and I think I've said this on broadcasts before this, but this character has never been cooler since now she's been turned into a vampire. But Vampire Jubilee versus Lord Deathstrike. And, you know, it's this big, massive sword fight going on. And Jubilee's having a difficult time. Well, difficult time is putting it mildly. She can't beat Lord Deathstrike. Everything she does, he counters. And it really quickly deteriorates. And you can see she's in big trouble trying to go hand-to-hand with a sword with this guy. So then she pulls the classic, I don't know, I've seen it in a bunch of places. But, like, I know Rob Roy was a good one. And there's a couple others where... what she does is she leaps at him and lets him stab her. So the sword goes right, you know, in through her stomach, out through the back, and so she can get close to him, because she wasn't able to get close to him at all with the sword. And then once she got close to him, that's when she delivered the big blow. And I think she just, oh no, what she did is she headbutted him, and then she gave him a massive punch across the face to knock him down. And then she pulled the sword out of her own belly, because, you know, she's a vampire. And she explains that, right? She's like, unless you're coming at me with wood, you know, you can stab me all you want. This isn't going to do anything. It stings a little, but, you know, other than that. And then she goes and she's going to rip his neck out with her fangs, and Razzo convinces her to stop. But excellent, excellent fight. And one of the things that I loved about it shows how ruthless Jubilee's become, but it also shows how incredibly impressive Lord Deathstrike is as a hand-to-hand fighter. He's very, very skilled.
See, I thought that it diminished Lord Deathstrike to be fighting Jubilee, even though she is better than she's ever been. And I did think the sword thing was kind of cool, but I think he would have, if Jason Aaron had written that, I think he would have, Lord Deathstrike would have taken her out in a heartbeat.
Well, see, I didn't want to say too much, because I don't want to influence anybody's voting for future fights or anything like that.
Right.
But all that I'd say to that, and maybe Daniel will chime in here, maybe he won't at all, is there's more to that fight than just Jubilee that shows.
Oh, okay.
Lord Deathstrike being pretty darn good.
Hmm. There's a reason why Razo wasn't in that fight.
Okay.
You don't have to say.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil anything and hurt my
yeah
that's later.
That's okay. What I was. That's...
Fair enough. Okay.
Daniel, do you have a fight for us?
My fight of the week, because I don't get to read often, but I always make sure I read this book, is Uncanny X-Force's fight between Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler and Age of Apocalypse Iceman. It was nice to see some closure. I know a lot of titles leave off things, but when Iceman came back and living the Playboy life, and it was just nice to see, like, the backstory behind these two friends and them having their falling out and everything. I guess the part that really hit me stronger was the fact that Jochini wasn't doing the art anymore.
Yeah. Phil Noto was really good in that book.
I think anybody was an improvement. He took me out. Ticini took me out of that element because he didn't fit that dark style. He was more like the Picasso of the comics industry.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, Eli.
Mine was another DC book. I'm so sorry, guys.
It's okay.
Before I apologize, I should also say it's Batman.
Ah, yes. Oh, I know what you're going to talk about. Yeah.
And it is a Bruce Wayne fight, actually. So, this whole for anyone who's been reading Batman or a few of the other Bat Family books, the Court of Owls is coming after lots of prominent Gothamites, and they come after Bruce Wayne, and they come after Bruce Wayne, not Batman. And so they come to Wayne Manor, and you know Bruce is in the house chilling with Alfred and recovering from his injuries or whatever. And he hears a noise. He goes up to investigate. He sends Alfred down to the Batcave, and there's got to be like, I don't know, 10 of these Court of Owls assassins that have descended upon the house. One of them goes downstairs after Alfred into the Batcave, and Bruce, he goes upstairs because that's where they hear the noise. And it's a little dopey that Bruce didn't expect this and was prepared for them to come after him at some point. But so he gets up there and he's fighting two or three of them inside his house. And then the fight, you know, he kind of runs towards the window. He does a flip and he gets up on the roof, and then the fight kind of gets going. And my favorite part here is he's up on the roof and he's got you know, a couple of these guys are coming after him with swords, and he's in his robe, you know, and he grabs a weather vane, and he's nailing this guy with the weather vane, getting him in, you know, beating him down while he's in his bathrobe. And, you know, the whole time the owl assassin, he's like, you know, try to run. We'll find you wherever you go. And Bruce, of course, he owns this guy. And then he takes this weather vane and he stabs him. Right through his eye. And then all Bruce said, after he says, we'll follow you wherever you go, the assassin, Bruce stabs him through the eye, and then he says, no, you won't. And then three more assassins descend on Bruce, and they're on the roof. And the guy, these guys, they have regenerative blood, so they're ridiculously hard to kill. And so, of course, that didn't kill him. And the guy who's been stabbed through the eye, he says, brothers, I am pinned. It's just so funny to me. He's been stabbed through his eye, pinned to the roof with this weather vane, and all he says is, brothers, I'm pinned. And then, of course, and they go after Bruce, and he hits this little button, and he goes down the chimney to the cave, and him and Alfred regroup, and then there's another fight that takes place down there. Actually, no, not a fight. They get ready for a fight, and that's where this issue ends. So... But that was it, just that tiny little thing on the roof. I didn't read too much this week. I mean, that's not the greatest fight in the world, but it was pretty cool. How matter of fact that assassin goes, I am pinned. And it's like no pain, no nothing. And so that's my fight of the week. Batman number 8. And it, what is that? Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo.
Yeah. All right. Well, my fight of the week I picked just because I want to argue with Eli a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. My fight of the week comes from Avengers versus X-Men number 2, and it is the Cyclops versus Captain America fight. It is clear that Captain America is nothing but a dirty cheater and is taking advantage of Cyclops in the middle of this fight. Now, for those who may not know this battle, Captain America shows up to Utopia, says that they're going to take Hope away, who is they think is the target of the Phoenix Force that's coming to Earth, and Cyclops says no, And so now Captain America fully knows that he's going there to start a fight with Cyclops.
Oh my goodness.
He totally knows. And the reason that he totally knows is because he has a helicarrier full of all the Avengers as backup. So when he says, is this what, are we really going to do this? And Cyclops just blasts him way far away and, knocks him completely on his ass. And the argument is that Captain America, that was a cheap shot when Captain America knew full well that that's what Cyclops was going to do. And Cyclops completely, takes him out. Okay, later in the fight, Captain America, and I'll give you this. I mean, it doesn't subdue Captain America. He comes right back, and he comes with his Avenger thug buddies, and they start going at it, and everybody starts fighting each other, Cyclops is blasting everywhere because he's defending his island, he's defending his people, he's just blasting left and right, and Captain America gets the cheap shot in with his shield while Cyclops is distracted. He throws the shield and bonks him on the head, okay? So, and the text even says that he has a concussion, okay? So, Cyclops, goes down for a minute, but then then the two of them start going at it back and forth, and he's got a concussion, so he's not at full power, so he's blasting it at Steve, and Steve has his shield up and kind of keeps walking towards Scott and ends up coming all the way up to Scott and then kind of smashing him in the face with his shield, and Scott goes down for a second, maybe, while Cap says some schmarmy remark as if he were justified in what he's doing, and then 5 seconds later they're both up and they're still fighting other people and they're trying to find what Hope is doing, and we get to the end of the issue, but the argument that we've had on the boards Infinite Speech was having this argument with Cape Killer in one thread, and I was having this argument with Eli in the Power Rankings thread, is that, and it's been hotly debated for a few weeks now, that between Cyclops and Captain America, there's nothing that you can say that will convince me that Captain America is not just a dirty, backhanded wuss of a fighter who's throwing cheap shots in the middle of this fight.
You are just fishing for controversy.
Oh yeah, I totally am.
Cap is the model of honorable
not in this fight. He's not.
All right. Just I'll be quick. Yes, Cap knew a fight was probably imminent, but at that's like what Cyclops did to Cap to start it, where he shot him like 15 feet away with his I-beam.
60, when they were just standing 100, there talking. 100, 120, 300 yards, 450,000 miles away. That's probably...
Okay. that's tantamount to boxers standing there while the ref is saying, yeah, let's have a good clean fight. One of them just jaws the other one. Yeah, they know a fight's coming, but at that moment, they're not fighting. The fight hasn't begun.
Oh, give me a break. What is he going to say? What is he going to say?
One guy takes a cheap shot.
What is he going to say? What is he going to say? Okay, should we start fighting now? Somebody has to throw the first punch. And it was Scott.
And it was Scott, yes. But that caught Steve a little off guard.
No way.
Because
he had a shield up.
Hang on. That's the first. And the second thing, yeah, he kind of bonks him on the head when he's not looking.
Cheap shot.
But he doesn't hit him hard. He could have decapitated him.
He gives him a concussion.
But,
you're saying that that's not hard?
He didn't... Oh, come on. With all we've seen Cap do with that shield, he could have taken his head off. And if you're telling me that a concussion is enough to weaken Scott so much that Cap can just walk right through his I-beam, that's pretty sad. But Cap walks through his blast.
How else is he going to walk through his blast?
Hits him on the head. And yeah, they kind of just stand there, and then they Stike gets back up and they go at it. this is probably going to be a pretty lame series where there's not going to be any clear-cut winners in any of these fights.
Right.
But Psyche sending his I-beams at a bunch of the Avengers at once, that's pretty cool. I'll give you that. But him getting a concussion and that being the reason why, as you say, Cap can walk through up to him through his I-beam, that's pretty lame.
That's the only thing I can think of that would allow Captain America to do that. The only other person who's been able to walk through Cyclops' beam is the Hulk. And I'm sorry, but Captain America is no Hulk.
No, he's no Hulk, but that shield is unique in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
What? It is. We know that it is, and it has
absorption
and energy deflection.
But it's still being held. It's still being held by a guy who is just barely above human level power.
Exactly. He's not. He's probably a little bit stronger than Psyche, who's probably peak human. But that was enough.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the panel right now. You know what the panel is?
What?
In the background of this panel, there's Avengers and X-Men, there's Spider-Woman and Psylocke, Daredevil, Warpath, and there's Captain America standing. You can see his boots, and you can see Psyche in the dirt.
For a second.
During the fight, when they were both fighting each other.
But he's not subdued. But he's not subdued.
One man ended up in the on the dirt.
Well, what about the time when Cyclops kicked his ass into the ocean? How about that?
Because that happened
first.
That was a cheap shot, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It wasn't. It was not. So
he got the drop on him because while Cap didn't realize the chat was over, Psyche decided to end the conversation with an optic blast. And Cap is just so awesome. He got his shield up in time. But you see what happens when Cap has the shield in front of him and he has his feet under him. He just walks right through it.
Hey, the only way that you could actually have this be fair is if you have somebody who's not an American write that book.
Ha ha. Touche.
Because for some bizarre reason, and I have no idea what it is, but Americans freaking love Captain America. So, you know, Galactus will invade Earth and Captain America will take him down. You know what
All
I mean?
Right. You're being a little ridiculous there.
No. It's
yes.
True. And same with your boxing analogy. Your boxing analogy is horrible because
it's perfect.
No, it's not. I'm going to change it just slightly. Okay. I'm going to change your analogy just slightly.
Okay.
If you go by the books that came out this week, and every single one of them shows this big prep moment leading up to this fight, where all Steve Rogers did was go around to everywhere and prep everybody for this giant fight, whether it's, you know, the Jean Grey Institute, you know, the Helicarrier, he had them all going, right? So I wouldn't call it like two boxers getting into the ring together and then one cheap shots the other while the ref's, you know, saying we're going to have a fair fight. I would say it's more like wrestling, and you have two wrestlers come into the ring and one of them has all his wrestling buddies standing at the ring beside him. Do you know what I mean? And what's going to happen there? Well, I'm going to deck the guy because he didn't bring them to come watch the fight. Do you know what I mean? Like, he didn't bring him to come. Like, so what? He brought the Red Hulk to help negotiate? Because I can tell you he didn't. You know what I mean?
Right.
And Steve Rogers, like, you can see it. In ever since Civil War, the only thing this guy does is bark commands. That's it. Red Hulk, go punch that guy. Thor, throw your hammer at that guy.
That's completely wrong. He fought one-on-one, the Shadow Council guy, whose name I can't remember, and he got his butt kicked. Pretty good. He eventually took that guy out. And I'm looking right now. He's standing over Psyche right now in AVX number 2. Cap has done plenty, all right? There was that big battle on Mars, which and all that's irrelevant for this right here. This was a pretty good moment. I mean, he didn't subdue Psyche, obviously. But I still disagree with you about the first volley. It was like the boxers are walking up to each other and their gloves aren't up yet. They're still at their arms are still at their sides, and one of them he just quick shots the other. But so far, it's still pretty even. I mean, Psyche put Cap on his butt. Cap put Psyche on his butt. Psyche has a concussion. I'm sure he'll get back up and they'll continue to just go at it. So,
yeah.
Hey Jeff, have you ever read a comic book where one superhero punches the Hulk one punch and knocks him out?
No.
No, I have. I own one downstairs, Captain America does it.
Oh, really?
And I know Eli knows what I'm talking about. Don't you, Eli?
I can't remember, where actually,
Spider-Man's fighting against the Hulk. And Spider-Man's fighting against the Hulk, and he's getting his ass kicked by the Hulk. And then Captain America comes in, walks up to him, slams him once in the face with the shield, knocks out the Hulk.
Right.
I haven't read that, but I believe it. But I mean,
oh, me too.
Hey,
me too.
If you have that, then what's your problem? Of course, Cap can walk through psychic beams, just like I told you
what my problem is. Put somebody who's not an American in the writing department for that, and you'll see what happens in these fights.
Right.
Well, but you got to admit, one little shield hit to the head, and Scott has a concussion. I mean, there's no durability there. He's fragile. He's as fragile as a regular guy.
So is Cap.
No, he's not. Super Soldier Serum, baby. But he's a little bit more durable.
No, what are you talking about? Hey, you're completely flip-flopping on your argument here. You just went from saying that his shield's something special, and that's why he can, you know, retract all of these I-beams from Scott, and now you're saying one flimsy shield knocks him down. Which is it?
No, I'm saying the one flimsy... I'm not saying that. I'm saying the shield is pretty awesome, but Cap obviously didn't throw it hard. I mean, you can throw a manhole cover at someone's head and crush their skull. Cap obviously could have done that, but he didn't. He just tossed it a little bit. And it gave him a concussion?
Hey, if he's the master tactician here, what he should have done is thrown the shield and knocked Sykes' visor off.
Yeah.
He could have ended the entire...
It's apparent Cap doesn't want to hurt anybody. He could have taken Syke out when Syke was on the ground,
actually,
but instead he stands over and talks to him.
Actually, if Steve is the master tactician, why didn't he just call up Scott when he found out the Phoenix Force was coming? He's done it in like every major issue of Uncanny X-Men since Kieran Gillen's been writing. He calls him up and he says, hey, you guys want to take this one? You know, but instead he goes around behind Scott's back and starts gathering his little cronies and all of his little army. He goes to Wolverine, which I don't understand that at all. That was stupid. And starts, assuming that the Phoenix Force is coming for Hope, which he should have just called Scott and said, hey, what do you think about this? And, there again, we wouldn't have had AVX if he had done that.
Exactly.
But
that may be a little lame, but Cap knew how Scott would react. But I'll give you something else that's lame. In the beginning of that issue, Scott says, ugly stepchildren. That's all we've ever been to them. As soon as we get a messiah of our own, they want to swoop in and take her away.
That's
like a little teenage girl whining.
I agree.
This issue
was not
do that lame crap to progress the story because they.
This issue
I thought that was pretty accurate description.
Well, I thought it was out of the blue.
It's totally out of the blue because nobody cared about Hope until the Phoenix was heading for Utopia.
Hey, but I can't find it right now. I'm going through my issues. I'm trying to find it like crazy. But when Red Hulk and Captain America and Thor were talking in the helicarrier, and I'm not sure which one it was in, and you said that Cap doesn't want to hurt anybody. Their whole thing was that we need to take them out and take them out fast because they're not going to be giving us any second chances and they're going to come at us hard. So they weren't down there to not hurt people. Like,
right.
They knew exactly what they were getting into and what they were going to have to do to win. So when Cap threw his shield at Scott's head, I agree, he probably wasn't trying to kill him, but he was trying to take him down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he didn't. What he did is he knocked him down. He stood back up. Like
Cap could have easily taken him out permanently if he wanted. If he wanted to take him down, why, when Scott was on the ground a foot in front of Cap, did Cap start talking? He said three full sentences to Scott.
Do you want me to answer that? Because that's all he ever does is talk.
Oh, you know what I mean? burn.
He's probably doing this. He's probably getting ready to say, Red Hulk, punch Scott for me, please. He's probably something like that. Thor, get him.
Golly, I don't understand where all this Scott love and this Captain hate is coming from.
Yeah. I don't love Scott. I hate Scott. But I do. I recognize the fact that Steve Rogers can't punch his way out of a paper bag anymore.
You are so wrong.
Well, we've now primed the pump for a good fight. So
and here's another one. If Scott is such a great tactician, how come he didn't have Magneto just fling the helicarrier a few miles away? Instead, he's got Magneto and Emma trying to stop Doctor Strange. So two X-Men wasted on one lame Sorcerer Supreme when Magneto could have just flung the whole helicarrier easily. I think Magneto could have easily tossed that thing into the Atlantic, all the way across the continent if he wanted.
But they didn't. They didn't send. They sent Magneto and Emma Frost after Iron Man. Right? Magic was the one who took out Doctor Strange.
No. Yeah. But I'm talking about. I'm still looking at the panel where Scott is talking to Cap, and in the panel right above it, Nemesis is shooting Iron Man with little cross bullets. Weird. And Emma and Magneto are going after Strange. I guess this was before Scott had magic take Strange out.
Oh, you're looking at the big splash panel kind of stuff,
right?
No,
It's before Emma goes to try to protect Hope, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, the fact is, I don't think you can make any real judgments about either of these two characters from the series because it's just going to be written so lame. I think.
Well,
I mean, what a waste of Magneto.
It was a pretty horrible issue to be.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's not written lame. It's just that it has to be written one way or the other. Do you know what I mean?
And
it's such a coin toss that it doesn't matter how you write it, it's going to be wrong. You know what I mean? Like,
but have some balls and write something that's somewhat definitive and makes sense. Yeah. You know, instead of having Magneto toss Colossus up there, have Magneto do what Magneto does.
Right.
Take the giant metal vehicle in the sky and toss
it
somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know if he'd do that, though.
Oh, come on. He could so do that.
No. He can do it, but would he? Like, we're talking a helicarrier with probably almost 1,000 people on it. Do you know what I mean? It's not like Miss Marvel's driving it. You know what I mean? Like, I honestly don't think that Magneto's just going to pull that sucker out of the sky and drop it in the ocean, because there's a bunch of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents on there. You know, as far as they're probably pissing their pants, wishing they were home. You know what I mean? Like, Magneto's not going to do that.
What I want to know is why were most of the Avengers holding those big sticks that American Gladiators used to do the joust?
Yeah.
Why were they holding those things? Were they planning to have a joust competition, and that's how they were going to duke this out and decide it?
And then after they land on the beach, those sticks are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't understand that. That was bizarre.
Well, and of course, too, they right away have some kind of backdoor stupidity to drop Emma Frost and the telepathy, because what's the one thing that the X-Men have that will absolutely annihilate the Avengers is telepaths, right? So right away, you know, Tony's invented telepathic nanobots or something like that, a nanovirus or
yeah,
some
that was
yeah,
lame.
Shit. It was like,
that
what?
Was lame.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
But that's what they do.
All right, well, speaking of AVX, tonight's fight features from the X-Men, Gambit, managed by Daniel Fabrizio, versus the Avengers, Vision, who is managed by Eli Anthony. Daniel was scheduled as the home team and determined that the fight will take place at the mutant concentration camp called Neverland. And we certainly want all of you out there who are listening to go to comicattack.former.com to learn more about the fighters and the environment and to weigh in on everything that pertains to this fight. So listen to the podcast and the voting rules and everything we'll talk a little bit about after these guys duke it out. And now it's time for the coin toss. And I think Eli gets to call it.
Before we do the coin toss,
yes.
Was there a car? Was there an environment switch?
No, you're right. Sorry, we didn't.
I'm not going to send Gambit to a mutant concentration camp.
You're right. Sorry, we didn't change it on the script. It's the fight's taking place in Madripoor.
That's my fault.
Madripoor.
I typed the wrong one in.
The South. Was it the South Asian? Whatever. Place.
Yeah, it's like a port, right? It's
it's like a port city. Yeah,
it's not a real place. So
thank you, Daniel, for correcting us there. So yeah, it's at Madripoor. So Eli gets to call the coin toss.
What do we got this week,
Eli? Just to spice it up this week, to get away from the coins for a little bit, something more Canadian than Canadian money. is I have a Tim Hortons card in front of me. Okay. And Tim Hortons is a coffee franchise in Canada. I don't know. Do you guys have Tim Hortons in the States?
Yeah, I was gonna say, what the hell is that?
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
It's so funny. So it's a huge coffee and donut franchise in Canada, and it's so popular. It's like almost religious popular. Everybody in the morning wakes up. Everybody goes to Tim Hortons for a coffee. Do you know what I mean? Like I can't even express to you how. Like, is Starbucks big down with you guys?
Yeah. So it's kind of like Starbucks is for here. Yeah. Right.
But bigger. But like more important. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they were ever going to say that they were going to close Tim Hortons in Canada, you would have like riots in the streets and things like that. Like, it's part of people's identity here for some reason, right. Including myself. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, if you ever go to Canada, you have to. And you won't be impressed at all, but it's just, I don't know what it is. It's something that Canadians live and die by. So I have a Tim Hortons card in front of me. It's a little card you use to pay there instead of, if you don't want to bring money with you, you just pre-purchase these cards. And I'm going on and on about this. So I have a Tim Hortons card, and on the front of it has a little nice little hockey scene with these kids playing hockey.
Tonight COC is brought to you by Tim Hortons.
Wow, that'd be great if we got them as their sponsor. Hey, honestly, if you come here, there's a Tim Hortons on like every corner. You know what I mean? Like in the city that I live in, I'll bet you there's got to be at least 100 Tim Hortons. Like they even put them in gas stations now. So it's like not a full restaurant. It's just like this quick Tim Hortons stop kind of thing. It's unbelievable. It's hard to describe. Anyway, so on the front of this card is this nice little cute little hockey scene with these kids playing hockey. And on the back is the, the magnetic strip. So what do you want? You want the hockey scene or the magnetic strip?
Ooh. Well, we're just talking about Magneto. Give me the magnetic strip, baby.
You want the magnetic strip? All right, here we go. Let's see if you can hear it fall on the keyboard. You ready?
Come on, magnetic strip.
Yeah. No, it's the hockey scene. So it's up to Daniel. Daniel, do you want Eli to go rationale first, or do you want to give yours first?
I will go second.
All right, Eli.
I hate going first. Okay. So Vision, pretty standard stuff for Vision. He flies around and he goes intangible. Nothing's really going to hurt him in this. Nothing, especially that Gambit has, is going to hurt him when he's in this state. Vision also has some holographic manipulation abilities, but he doesn't even need that. He doesn't need to hide. He can just phase. He can walk and just phase through buildings and walls, or he can just fly and kind of float. And so he's got he can either wait for Gambit to show himself and make an attack, or he can. Vision has scanners. He can scan for life forms and energy sources, and he can probably pick up Gambit like that. Or he can maybe play a nice trick on Gambit. Vision can do voice imitation, and surely Vision has several people that Gambit would know. He's heard several people speak that Gambit knows, including Rogue, and Vision could use some trickery there to. Definitely not trick Gambit into thinking like, oh no, Rogue's here. Let me go run out like an idiot. But maybe just to mess with his head a little bit, get him a little off balance, so that he can't get a solid offense going or a solid defense, which is the only thing that's gonna be any good for him. He's got no offense that can hurt Vision. And then of course, once he finds him, he can do any number of things. He can fly down, and phase through him, kind of like what he did to Magneto recently, and cause him to have some heart palpitations there. Maybe he's still feeling some frustration over his encounter with Magneto, or maybe he's going to take out some of that Avengers versus X-Men feelings and. Phase his hand into Gambit's chest and screw with him that way and get him to, maybe have some hard feelings inside and put him down on his knees and then just knock him out, just punch him a little bit, or he can use his energy beams to play around with him a bit. Of course, Gambit's an energy guy. He's going to be throwing his little cards, his little two of clubs and whatnot at Vision in vain. It won't do anything to him. Or he can just, you know, he can just phase right behind him and just punch him in the back of the head, knock him out cold, and end it quick. And you know, Vision kind of floats and hovers around. He doesn't really make any noise when he's phased. So as far as the stealth aspect goes, he can phase through the ground, through walls and roofs. Gambit's completely screwed. So there's several ways that Vision can take Gambit down, and there's really nothing that I see that Gambit can do to Vision. Even if Vision is not phased and he's at his regular density and he's just walking around, Gambit, I don't see how Gambit's gonna damage him. Vision's pretty tough, pretty durable.
All right. Daniel.
Okay. So Gambit, Vision, Madripoor. Let's talk about the environment for a second. It's Madripoor, southeastern city. When was the last time Vision was there? When was the last time Gambit was there? Gambit was just there where his love interest on the island is actually Tiger. So he notices he's in Madripoor. He's going to go for his connections first and foremost. Gambit can wait around. Gambit was a thief. He knows how to be stealthy. He can do all that. Yes, he does have his cards, but his cards are just what he likes. It doesn't mean that that's the only thing he can charge up. He can charge up his bow staff. He's one of the best hand-to-hand fighters in the Marvel Universe, as per Nick Fury. There's lots of things that, yes, Vision can do. He can phase. He can do all this. But Gambit also has with his kinetic energy, with his recent boost, that Vision wouldn't have any idea about, since this happened after disassembled, which you also had to throw that into account. What would the Vision know about Gambit going into this? Just what he used to know. Would he know that Gambit is also, or was, a Horseman of Apocalypse, who actually threatened Apocalypse to the point where Apocalypse backed down from him? There's many things that the Vision can do, but there's nothing that can really stop Gambit in this scenario. He's playing on his home field, something he knows how to do. Ambushing people, that's something he knows how to do. He's not afraid to make those judgment calls on when to attack. He's pretty adept at that. He's had plenty of training with the X-Men in this situation. I mean, they've taken out robots, space entities, everything. I just don't see where the Vision can actually win this without getting close to Gambit. And if you get close to Gambit, Gambit will charge yourself up. That's what he does. It's not just the cards. He has the potential to not just charge cards, but release the potential kinetic energy in objects and beings. So last time I checked, Vision was a synthezoid. Therefore, he's nothing but energy. Gambit would be able to charge that up and make Vision explode upon himself. And even if even if Vision gets the upper hand, I think that Gambit would also have the ability to transform himself into death, in which case he can manipulate the air around the Vision to a combustible gas. So then guess what? Anytime the Vision decides he wants to pretend he's Iron Man and shoot off the electronic bolts or whatever, he's going to end up blowing up himself. So honestly, I really don't see where the Vision, as good of a character as he is, how he can match up to the power set that Gambit now possesses and is slowly beginning to unlock once again after his burnout from fighting New Sun.
All right. What else? Anything?
Gambit's just a regular dude. He had with all the physical frailties of a regular human. So, I mean, what and okay, sure, he Nick Fury thinks he's one of the best hand-to-hand fighters in the Marvel U, well, big whoop, even if he is, which that's a separate argument, but that's not going to do jack for him in this fight. And, I mean, the Vision is ridiculously just magnitudes stronger than Gambit. Vision is like a 90-ton strength guy. It's not going to take anything from him to put Gambit down. And basically, Gambit would need an incredible amount of luck, a writer that is just in love with him and who hates Vision, for him to win this fight in comics. Whereas anything that Vision throws at Gambit could take Gambit down, really. He's just a guy when it comes to the punishment that he can and cannot take. Whereas Vision can take a lot of punishment. He's pretty durable. And he's intangible, so... And he can fly.
His intangibility won't hold up, though. He would have to stay intangible the entire fight. How are you going to take him out, though? That's where the point is. And
but that's what Vision does. I mean, he can control his density.
Vision relies on his teammates too much to take down somebody. Gambit will just go head-to-head with the person. He doesn't care. And the thing that you're saying, he's just a regular guy... He's not a regular guy. He would be on your argument earlier about Captain America. He performs at Captain America levels. Therefore, if Captain America can one-shot the Hulk, Gambit should be able to, too.
Oh, boy.
Because of his kinetic energy potential, Gambit also has the healing factor. He can charge his bow staff. Okay, the Vision goes intangible, but... Okay, if he comes in on him, one hit from that bow staff is like getting hit by a tank.
That's what she said.
That was a perfect opportunity for her. That's what she said. I like that.
That's the clobbering clergyman, ladies and gentlemen.
I had to shut down the call because of Jeff's inappropriate comment there.
We appreciate that, Ian.
When he said charge up my bow staff, I was like, I mean, what else can I say?
I mean, Gambit has a lot of power and potential, and I think Vision would be an amazing fight because this is taking two different power sets. Who wins that fight? And honestly, in that scenario where it's on Gambit's home court, it wouldn't even be a real match.
Yeah, you're saying all that, but Gambit... He may perform like Cap in some situations, but the fact is Cap is more durable than any regular human. You know, it's not like a couple of punches from the Hulk and keep going. And it's not like Gambit makes a habit of fighting guys who are Vision's strength and taking punishment that they can dish out. Gambit fights other guys like him. Mainly, and that's who he spars with and goes back and forth with. And someone like Vision just outclasses him at every level.
But Gambit has that ability just to transform at will into death. I think that is also a determining factor in him being able to take out Vision. I mean, this guy scared Apocalypse with what he's able to do. Vision has no basics of how to take down somebody of that level. Like, what's he gonna do? Does he have access to a life seed? That is apparently one of the very few ways to take out somebody of that nature without a full team behind you.
Does Gambit just transform into death now? Is that his thing?
He can transform into death. He's released that potential. It's like when I was talking about my fight of the week. I like to see some closure with the books, and this is one of those things that we never received closure on, but all levels point to him just being able to change at will. If he really wanted to, he could just change into death. He's done it numerous occasions. It's only whenever he goes to a place such as Limbo, where the evil is so strong, or it brings out his emotions so strong, he's essentially hulking out and becoming this whole nother person, that he's able to hit that power level.
Hmm. Can he do that thing as Death, or is that just speculation? It's something he has done, or he does when he's in limbo or something.
I believe
he can do that.
I believe he can do that. That's the official ruling, at least.
The official ruling?
Yep.
In Second Coming, before he goes to join them, whenever they're going to limbo, I think it's Cannonball goes up to him and says, "Hey, we need you to go with us. We need somebody that can go to that spot where nobody else will go." And Gambit just, like, his eyes and his face start to turn black, and he, like, points up the card, and the air matter around him starts forming into a gaseous cloud.
So he can, it says here he can convert materials into toxic substances, like breathable air into poisonous gases. That's not really going to hurt Vision.
No, it's not just limited to that. He can also do combustible gases, just things like that.
Even still, Vision can survive in explosions.
He can survive an explosion, but if he's blasted like that, will it knock the Vision out? The Vision has been known to get knocked out quickly whenever he's getting hit by enough of a force.
Yeah, but just a fireball is not that big of a force. I mean, and Vision's in the air; he's flying around. This is not the greatest attack for a man that's intangible and that's flying around. Concussive force isn't going to hurt someone who's intangible. I mean, it's way cooler than Gambit's regular powers, which are lame as all get out, but I still don't see how it gives him a leg up against Vision.
I can understand why you wouldn't see it, but if the entire area is nothing but this gas, and it doesn't affect Death at all like that, and it just one blast, either kinetic. Guess what? The card is like the equivalent of a grenade. You drop that down, lights the air. I mean, it's going to blow sky high. There's no doubt about that. Will it be enough to take out the Vision? And I think it would be.
All right. Well, good job, guys. And I think y'all both have some pretty convincing arguments, and we'll let y'all continue the debate on the forums. It's important for all the listeners and managers to understand that the circumstances under which the fighters compete are that they are teleported into the respective environment on opposite ends of the environment, and the fighters have full disposal of any and all the resources available in the environment. Fighters aren't allowed to leave in the environment, but teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. And lastly, the winner will be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued the opponent's fighter. Subduing can be anything from restraining to killing.
Good. Next week, we see Tom McNeely versus Dan Briand, and Tom gets to choose the environment because he's the home team. But this concludes our fight section of the podcast and brings us to our newer section, which we call affectionately the COC Power Rankings.
Power Rankings!
Yes. See, I paused and everything just so you could do it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Where Jeff and myself take it upon ourselves to rank the five new characters each week in terms of who we believe is the toughest person on that list. If you'd like to submit a character to be ranked or just want to tell us how horrible our choices are, log in at comicattack.former.com and tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings. Tonight's five nominees are, I tried to pick five female nominees who all have, you know, their power levels are somewhere in the neighborhood of each other. And who we picked was Moonstone from the Thunderbolts, Danger of the X-Men, Miss Marvel of Avengers fame and soon to have her own solo series coming out, Monet of X Factor. Is that right?
Yeah.
X Factor. I don't know what that.
Yep.
And Storm of X-Men, Avengers, Fantastic Four, whole bunch of books. Just kidding. So how do you want to do this, Jeff? Do you want to go? You want me to go?
Let's see. Why don't you go first?
I'll go first?
Yep.
Okay. For me, I put them in this order. From top to bottom in terms of 1 to 5, I put Miss Marvel as number 1. I put Monet as number 2. Storm as number 3. Moonstone, 4. And Danger as 5. Miss Marvel I put as number 1 because I think she's kind of got a really good all-around game that she brings into a fight. She's got good strength. Her energy absorption powers are amazing. You know, she has really high level shield clearance, which means that she's expertly trained. She's been, you know, co-leader of the Avengers. She can fly. She super strength. She's kind of the total package. Monet I put second. She has many of the same things that we just discussed with Miss Marvel. The thing with Monet is that I think Monet, and, you know, I think a lot of people will disagree with me here, but I think Monet's powers on paper are more impressive than they are in comics. Whenever you see Monet written, it's only every once in a while that she really shines and, you know, can kick ass and stuff like that. But for the most part, I find that she has many powers kind of wrapped up into one. Third, I put Storm. Storm, super powerful, but I find her to be a little bit one-dimensional. I know lots of people, especially probably Gid, would argue with this and, you know, talk about how when she had no powers, she took down Cyclops and all this kind of stuff like that. But I honestly think that was just more for the writing at the time. I don't really see her as being that tough.
Well, Cyclops got taken down by a shield earlier.
Boy's
just lame.
Cyclops and the Hulk got taken down by that shield.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
That should tell you something.
Yeah, it does, actually. It really does.
Yeah, I know.
Brian Michael Bendis from New York. Moonstone. I put Moonstone as 4th. Moonstone's a good character. It's funny, though. I think her most dangerous power is her ability to manipulate people as a psychiatrist. And it has nothing to do with her flight and intangibility and all those cool powers, too. But she's a great character. Love her in Thunder. Yeah, so Danger, she's more of a prison guard now than she is a big threat. I think she used to be a huge threat. Now I see her as she's kind of wallpaper.
All right, is that it? Is that all?
Well, here, why don't I say this real quick?
Okay.
For me, I would put Miss Marvel right below Magic, and actually what I did is I put Miss Marvel and Monet right in between Magic and Satana. I believe they can take out some of those other Magic people, but I don't think they could take out Magic, simply because she's just too freaky. I put Storm in between Son of Satan and Sebastian Shaw. I think that she could beat...
Okay, well... My power rankings are a lot different from Ian's, and Ian had to go off the call because something's going on with his Skype. But I had almost completely reverse. I put Danger as number 1, followed by Miss Marvel, Storm, Monet, and then Moonstone at the last. And my thinking here is, Danger is the one who really has the full package, and she may be just a warden, but she is the one person who is standing between all of these X-Men prisoners, and the X-Men. She is the warden because she is the most powerful person to be able to hold all of these people in the X-Men brig. She is the living embodiment of the Danger Room, so she can counteract any kind of superpower that there is. So even non-mutant superpowers. I mean, she has a way to kill all of the X-Men. However, I mean, the one thing that she can't do is actually kill, but she can subdue the heck out of pretty much anybody. She can she just has the entire package. She can counteract any superhuman power at all. You know, I'll agree with Ian and say, you know, Miss Marvel has the next highest level of power. I mean, she can do so much. And I followed that with Storm, not Monet, mainly because Storm seems to have, we forget that she's an Omega level mutant. She can do pretty much anything with her mind and the weather. So her power is near limitless, based on that. And while Monet, I do agree, has a full package, she's not the most powerful telepath. She's not the strongest. She's not even stronger than Guido. She can fly and she can do all these many things, but she's not the most powerful at any one of them. So it's just kind of a smattering of powers. And then Moonstone, I put Moonstone there because she's at the end because she's basically getting her ass handed to her every other issue by somebody. So while she does have a great deal of power and on this power ranking, she can do some pretty impressive things. She is still always, you know, getting beat in fights, and people are always tend to smack her around. So you know, my main point that I want Ian to understand is that Danger is not just some mere robot. That she has tremendous power at her disposal and can do just about anything to counteract anybody else's power. So if faced with any one of these characters, she's, you know, at least Ian would have to put her up above Storm because she would be able to counteract Storm's power because she is the Danger Room, or was the Danger Room. So she knows all of Storm's tricks. She knows exactly what she would be able to do. Same with Monet, who trained, is a trained X-Man as well. Danger has all the protocols for how to take out all of the X-Men. So at least Ian needs to put her up higher than number 5, I think. So anyway, that's what I'd say. Quickly, guys, what do you how would you rank these folks? Eli?
I don't know much about these characters, I'll tell you the truth. I think Ms. Marvel's number 1. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she does some pretty amazing things. And I mean, I think you've convinced me that I never knew too much about Danger. I knew that thing about that she's the embodiment of the Danger Room, but I hadn't thought about it like that she can counteract all the X-Men because she knows all about them because they've trained inside her. So I guess because of that, she would be number 2. Mm-hmm. And has Monet ever affected anyone's mind with her telepathy?
Yeah,
Does she ever successfully attack people telepathically?
Yeah, she has in recent issues of X-Factor quite often, yeah.
Is Storm vulnerable to telepathic attack?
Yes, but she also has been trained by Xavier, so she has some resistance, you would think.
Well, I reckon I'd put Storm above Monet.
Yeah.
Then and then Moonstone last. Okay. So I guess my list looks a lot like yours, Jeff, except I swap Danger with Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, yeah. That's fair. Daniel, how about you?
I'd go with Danger number 1. I mean, it's not just mutants that she's able to detain. She's also able to detain space entities. Mm-hmm. Then I would go Ms. Marvel because, well, potentially, she has one of the best power sets out there, able to essentially absorb and then reflect any source of energy. Then I would actually go with Moonstone. I know it's weird, but I think that with that stone, she's actually a very well-versed character. And in Dark Avengers, I think she really showcased it. And then now in Thunderbolts, although I don't think as much as I do enjoy the story, like content-wise, I don't think it's been very progressive towards that character specifically. I think it's been more about Man-Thing and other characters. Ghost has been fantastic in that story as well. Then I would go with Storm. I guess she has the potential to be an Omega level, But honestly, she hasn't been very well written since the early 2000s, in my opinion. And then Monet afterwards, I think she's actually probably the weakest character in X Factor.
Interesting. Well, I was putting my two cents in the larger power ranking scale, and I would put Danger probably equal with, but right about with. Y'all may think this is crazy, but I would put her there with Mr. Sinister in terms of power. I think.
Whoa.
And she's currently detaining Exodus, so I would say that would put her around that area. I would put Ms. Marvel where Ian put her underneath Magic, but I would put Storm. Let's see, I would put Storm right after Ms. Marvel on that list and above Satana. And I think I would also put Monet above Satana as well. Moonstone I would actually put underneath Satana, just because of a few of the things that I've seen in Thunderbolt. So Ian can go back and he gets the final ranking decision on this week. But before Skype goes out again, I just want to thank everybody for listening to episode number 27 of COC Live. You can go to comicattack.net and click on forums and go to our forums and talk about this episode and other episodes and all of the things that we've talked about tonight. Or you can go straight to comicattack.forum.com under COC podcast to vote for who you think is the most deserving to win tonight's fight. If you have any questions, go to the section that's called Ask the COCers and add your questions like Moses does regularly. We'd love to see millions of people talking about all of this stuff on the forums. And be sure to look for us on Twitter at COC Comic Attack. You can also find us on Facebook under COC Podcast. And also, be sure to go to iTunes. You can subscribe to this podcast and leave us an iTunes review. That's always helpful in helping people find who we are and what we do. And finally, we record every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, so be sure to get your votes in before then. We typically post the fights around Monday or Monday night or the podcast we post Monday night or Tuesday mornings, and so be sure to listen to that. So, thanks guys for joining us tonight. I want to thank Daniel Fabrizio, and glad that he's back on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, and as always, Eli, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jeff.
And for all you other listeners out there, we thank y'all for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Let's get ready to...